So what did you think of the talk, Dan?
I thought it was really interesting, actually. It was fascinating, and not something that, well, certainly not. I haven't heard many people talk about it other than yourself, other than, you know, talk about the whole mechanics of GPL enforcement. We all kind of talk about the ideology of it and how we, you know, we believe in it, or in some cases some people don't, etc. But the actual, you know, the way that you make it work is really interesting, I think.
Yeah, I was so excited when I saw Matthew had submitted that talk, because there aren't a lot of people that engage in GPL enforcement, and it's especially difficult for developers, I think, because it's not enjoyable work. It's very different from development. It's not like solving interesting technical problems and the kinds of things developers are good at. And I certainly have changed my mindset about my approach to work in doing GPL enforcement, because I'm a developer originally, but I've been doing all this GPL enforcement. It's pretty boring, and it's tedious, and it takes a lot of effort. So when a developer takes on and really says, I'm going to do some GPL enforcement, it's basically deserves more kudos, because they're actually doing something that's so different from what they do every day that they enjoy to try and defend the GPL. And so I've been really excited that Matthew's been taking this on and giving it a serious look, and he's particularly interested in these Android devices that he's seen using Linux.
Yeah, there's so many Android. I mean, he talks about tablets a lot in the talk there, but there's so many Android devices now. As he says, you can go to Bed, Bathroom, and Beyond and pick up a device with Linux on it, which is a surprise. It's very cool that he actually submitted that talk as well, because a lot of people might think that you put him up to it, but he's coming into this from his own kind of perspective as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I've often been seen as the voice of GPL enforcement and all that, and I'm glad that he's out there completely independent. I mean, he sends me stuff when he finds BusyBox violations. Obviously, sometimes when he looks at an Android device, he sees those BusyBox, and then he sends it to me to pursue it on BusyBox's behalf. But generally speaking, he's doing this enforcement and work on his own. And we're coordinated because we just stay in touch. But it's his own initiative. And yeah, I haven't put him up to it at all. I didn't even. It's funny because I recruited this entire track except for him. He's the one that submitted to this track without any prodding from me. I just the Linux Foundation people sent me the list of talks, which I was expecting to see all the people I recruited. And then their Matthew's talk was there in it, and I was like, that's great. I'm so glad he's going to speak about this.
Yeah, and it sounds like it was one of the first talks of the day as well. Is that right? Is it one of the early ones?
Yeah, in fact, it was the first talk. I don't know why. I don't know how Karen and I ended up picking this order that we ended up having his last. I think it was the order in which we got people to give us their slides is sort of how we ended up doing it. But yeah, his was the first talk of the day that day.
And it sounds like, I mean, just to kind of, I was going to say set the scene, but it's probably a bit pointless after we've played it, but you know what I mean. Just to set the scene, there's a lot of discussion going on in the room there that you can hear between kernel developers and other people. So who was he actually talking to there when they were talking about copyright assignment within the kernel and his mistaken belief that there wasn't any individual parts copyrighted and so on?
So there was a good number of kernels. Linux Collaboration Summit does attract a number of the Linux developers. I recall that Greg KH was in the room for most of the day. Ted Cho was there. I don't know if Ted Cho was there for Matthew's talk. I can't remember. Ted Cho was in the room for most of the day, though, so he may have been there as well. There was a couple of other kernel developers. There was sort of like James Bottomley was in the back with Greg KH. So they were sort of, I was sitting up in the front because I was coordinating the track, and then there was this like row of Linux developers in the back behind a supporting beam, and I couldn't really see them. I would just hear Greg KH just sort of shout something out every once in a while. But other than that, I couldn't actually see them all. But I know Greg KH and James Bottomley were back there, and Ted Cho was over on the other side by me. So there was a good number of kernel developers in the room, and in fact, a number of kernel developers who care about the GPL and GPL enforcement. I know Greg KH does. Publicly, people know that he spent some time trying to get Microsoft into compliance with regard to their virtualization stuff. So Greg's no stranger to taking care of the GPL and cares about it. And I think it's a misconception a lot of people have that the kernel developers, they don't care about the GPL. I think there are some that don't. I think there are a lot that do and don't know what to do. And then there are a few that know what to do about enforcement and do it. And and care about. And Matthew, of course, is one of them.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I recognized it. I thought I recognized Greg's voice straight away. He's got a very kind of deep, distinctive voice. Very interesting, yeah. And I thought one thing that that I found really, really kind of fascinating was this thing, thought of using the DMCA, which we all kind of demonize, in a slightly positive way in helping to enforce the GPL. I mean, as we've said, a copyright is part of copyleft, if you like, because we need the copyright laws if we're going to use them for copyleft. But I mean, this is something that you'll have a lot more kind of personal involvement with. But have you ever used the DMCA, and is that common in the US?
So I have on occasion used it. It was a tough for BusyBox enforcement. It was a tough decision. The few times that I have used it, obviously. Now, first of all, to be clear, the DMCA is a rather long law, and it has lots of different things in it. And the provisions that people are most upset about really don't relate at all to GPL enforcement, because those are the provisions that refer to if you have any sort of technological measure, basically DRM, that stops you from copying a file. That makes it a felony if you circumvent that. Now, obviously, that has nothing to do with GPL enforcement, because in GPL we encourage people to modify and copy the software. We want people to share it, so we would never use that kind of provision just because it's incompatible with what copyleft's trying to do. Copyleft's trying to encourage copying, but there are other parts of the DMCA, and that's what Matthew was talking about. And this DMCA takedown stuff is something, and this was designed to basically require internet service providers, and this is why things disappear from YouTube. If people have seen videos go up on YouTube and disappear, it's basically Google implementing the DMCA requirements, because if you have a notice as a service provider from a copyright holder that says, hey, you have to take this down because it's infringing my copyright, there's a whole series of routine systems that an ISP has to use when they get a letter like that from the copyright holder. So they have to first take it down, and then they have to inform the person who put it up and explain to the person who put it up that they've gotten this letter, and then the person who put it up can dispute that, and it's a whole series of, there's a whole system. Excuse me. So that system is what Matthew's talking about using, and I've used it on occasion in enforcement, and this is the ultimate irony of GPL enforcement, because we're using, as I like to say, the tools of the oppressor against the oppressor, because the copyright law was created by people who are trying to promulgate stuff that most people in the free software world, certainly in the free culture world, don't really agree with. They make copyright way too long, and they make copyright law too expansive. But in the end, copyleft is, as you say, depending on copyright. So we have to use the tools that are there, which are the tools of copyright. But every time I sort of dip into looking at another area of copyright law and using it for GPL enforcement, I certainly get the willies, and I'm sort of like, well, do we really want to do this? And I think used sparingly, it's not that bad, because it is stopping somebody from violating the GPL. The main issue with the DMCA takedown, I only like to use it as an attention grabber, i.e. to get the attention of a violator that's ignoring, because the only thing it does is causes them to stop distributing. And stopping somebody from distributing GPL software is always like really the consolation prize of GPL enforcement, because your goal is to get them into compliance, to give people source code. And if all you do is get them to stop distributing, well, you haven't really reached the goal, because you've just stopped people from getting the software. And the whole point of GPL is to get the software to as many people as possible with source code, of course. So it's a tough trade-off, but I think Matthew's experiencing what I've experienced too, which is the just deep frustration in how difficult it is to enforce the GPL on a systematic basis, and is looking for any tool he can find. And I don't blame him for that at all.
Yeah, I mean, obviously lawsuits are very long, often very long and expensive and difficult. And especially as an individual, it's kind of difficult to bring a lawsuit against a large company. So in some ways, it might be interesting to look at these alternatives, as you say, that people can kind of do themselves. And the things he said, like just reporting the violation and things like that, can make a big difference.
Yeah, I agree completely. And as I said, the DMCA thing can be a real attention grabber. I've used it in cases where I couldn't get a response from the violator. And if you go to their ISP and get them to take the firmware down off their website, and the ISP has to do that because the DMCA requires them to do that, basically it gets their attention. And when you haven't gotten your email's response, when you've been emailing them saying, you're violating the GPL, we need you to get the source code out there, If they won't answer you, using the DMCA just as an attention grabber works great. And then, of course, if they come into compliance, you can give them permission again to distribute, and they can put it right back up. So it's really useful as an attention grabber. And that's another one that Matthew mentioned, is this idea of using various different international trade agreements, which I haven't done at all, and he's looked into some of trying to stop things at the border when they come off the boat, because there's various different international trade rules about copyright infringement as well. And so that's another, and that's not actually copyright law, that's international trade law, as it relates to copyright law. So it's another area where you can use it as an attention grabber, and I guess I have a weird feeling about that. I kind of like the idea of like stopping the boat in the dock and saying, no, these things violate the GPL, you can't unload this stuff. On the other hand, it's disruptive, and you don't want to be... I mean, our goal in GPL enforcement, we never want to disrupt people's businesses. We want their business to continue, we just want it to continue in compliance. So it's a trade-off, again, about whether or not you want to disrupt somebody's business. And the only reason I can justify disrupting somebody's business is if they're ignoring you. If you're saying, hey, you need to come into compliance, and they just won't answer you, then I can see using a strategy that might disrupt their business.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I know you would strongly advocate, is trying to at least talk to people first and get a friendly response, because, as you say, it's not about being nasty and particularly wanting to stop them doing business at all. It's more a case of trying to get them into compliance. Something that I thought was interesting as well in the talk there was this idea that it might put people off using Linux, and I think Matt cites the Linksys case where I've actually got one of those Linksys routers, which now you can buy with Linux on them, but only because of you can put open firmware on there, but only because of the GPL violation and the fact that they had to release the code, and then they quickly moved to something else. So do you think that's a real danger, that companies will move to other things?
I think it's always a challenge. I think it's complicated, and you don't want to scare people away from using free software. Where I come down on this is basically that I know very commonly that people are violating the GPL because they can get away with it, and when you have that sort of situation, you sort of have to live with the fact that some people might be turned off of it. I mean, obviously, it's easier to use BSD software. That's always been true. If you take free BSD and you modify it and put it in a product, your obligations are very minimal. You basically have to display some copyright notices from the developers in your documentation or somewhere in the software. And that's a really easy compliance requirement. And if you want easy, BSD is the way to go. Sometimes GPL compliance requires effort and requires attention. And so I think Matthew's right that it can turn people off, and we have to do a trade-off. But on the other hand, if the people we're turning off are people that would otherwise violate the GPL, I'm not too worried about that. What I would be worried about is people who misunderstand, who, for example, think that compliance with GPL is hard. It's not really hard. It's hard once you violate it, because a lot of times you haven't done the things throughout the process that are required, and therefore you have to go back and figure out where the source code is, and sometimes they've lost the source code. I mean, it's really horrible, but it happens. But if you do it from the start, it's pretty easy. And that's what we try to educate people about, is make GPL compliance part of your regular processes, and it won't be that big of a burden.
Mm. Yeah, that was an interesting point that Matt made on his slide, where he said it's easy to get into compliance, if you think about it in advance. He also talked about the Linux Foundation's compliance program and stuff like that, which I have to confess is not something I really knew a lot about. So is that helping in this issue?
To be completely honest, I haven't seen it helping yet. But I think it's a good idea. And so I would love it if the Linux Foundation basically will take on the burden of education to companies to explain to them how to comply with the GPL. Obviously, that's a big part of what I do in the middle of GPL enforcement. Basically, a lot of GPL enforcement is teaching people how to comply properly. And if Linux Foundation can come along and be that teacher, it saves my work, it's going to save Matthew's work when he does enforcement and so forth. So I think that's great if they do it. I think the problem, and this is a problem that we've all faced, it's not the Linux Foundation's fault, it's a perennial problem that we don't know how to solve, is that a program like Linux Foundation's is only going to reach people who already know that there's something they have to do. So Linux Foundation will probably help those who are already basically in compliance comply a little bit better and more easily. But I don't know how they're going to reach the people who don't even know Linux Foundation exists. A lot of the violators I run into don't even know software is in their product because they got it from somewhere who got it from somewhere, and they got it from someone who got it from somewhere, and they don't even know that it's not just a hardware product that has software in it too. And those people wouldn't even know the name Linux if you said it to them. So those people are not going to reach out to the Linux Foundation and buy their training courses. So I don't think Linux Foundation can reach those. I can't reach them either except through the enforcement process. Basically, I see them in violation, and then I do an enforcement action, or Matthew does an enforcement action against them, and then suddenly they are aware. And I have referred GPL violators to the Linux Foundation program to get some education. The problem is they often don't want to pay for it. I mean, Linux Foundation does charge for that, and they basically don't want to pay for anything because they're basically, a lot of these companies are trying to cut costs so much, and they're running such thin margins that any additional cost is not acceptable. And the thing is that they're basically able to cut their costs so much because they're violating GPL. It's not like GPL compliance costs that much. I've sort of rule of thumb estimated that about 8 to 10,000 per product, you can per release, you can make sure that it's in compliance. But sometimes if they're only selling a couple hundred units of a device, well, that's a pretty expensive thing. If they're selling millions of units, that's basically no cost at all. But for places that want to sell just very few units, it's tough. And that's the nature of GPL software. You have to make sure you engineer the product in compliance. And if you can't afford to do that, then, well, try using FreeBSD. I mean, I think people don't use FreeBSD because it's not as adaptable as Linux is, ultimately.
As Matt said in the talk, probably doesn't run on as many platforms as Linux as well, which is obviously important these days. I think it was interesting that he talked about, as you said, small companies there and the cost and stuff. It's obviously a lot different approaching someone like, I don't know, Google, as opposed to, you know, a small little software house, and the danger that the companies might fold as a result of the GPL enforcement. So, I don't know, what do you think about that?
Oh, that's a you're asking me tough questions, Dan.
I'm grilling you.
It is a tough thing. I never want that to happen, and I try to do everything I can in enforcement to try to prevent that. The thing is I've run into companies where they are basically able to run their business on the back of GPL violation. Companies where they just go to China and they buy OEM boards and shove them in a white box and sell them into the U.S. and Europe. Well, the thing is that their failure to comply is basically how they're running their business on the margin of failure to comply. And in that case, should they really be in business? I don't know. I don't think so. Because if the only reason your business is profitable is because you violate the GPL, then is your business really legitimate? I think it's a complicated question. The thing is, compliance gets more expensive the longer you don't do it. So if you have a product out there in the market and you're not worrying about compliance, it gets more expensive all the time. So a lot of times, by the time I find a company in violation, it's so expensive for them to go back in time and try to get back into compliance for older products, it becomes a real burden. If they engineered the products from the start, they could build businesses. I mean, it's obvious that you can build businesses doing things in a compliant way. Lots of small companies do, and there's lots of small router manufacturers and small name your favorite device manufacturers that are doing that. It's just the ones that don't, well, they're basically undercutting their competitors. And that's another thing I bring up a lot in GPL enforcement, is it's not fair to the people that do comply, because it's not a huge cost, but it's a little bit of a cost to make sure you're always in compliance with GPL. You obviously have to have somebody paying attention to it. So the companies that don't comply, they're basically undercutting their competitors who do comply. And so I think it's really important we enforce the GPL to make sure that those who do the right thing are not being undercut by those who don't in the market by selling cheaper products.
Yeah, I mean, I know that that's something I've heard you say before, and I was pleased to hear that in the talk as well. I mean, an analogy that comes into my mind, I don't think this is particularly, well, it's definitely not accurate, but I don't know if it's particularly fair, but if I were to set up a company where I sell, you know, I don't know, stolen televisions or something, and then the government came along and arrested me and said, you can't do that, you're selling stolen televisions, no one would complain and say, but that's not fair, the guy's just trying to sell the stuff, you know. And if at the same time another company selling legitimate televisions obviously will have higher costs, so it's not a not a great comparison, but as I say, you know, it is the kind of a little bit of a parallel there, I think, that it, they are just enforcing the law.
Yeah, I mean, it is similar. I mean, the better example is somebody selling DVDs that are infringing the copyrights of the movies. Mm. You know, I mean, I think commercial copyright infringement is really wrong, no matter what you're doing. I mean, people argue about non-commercial infringement. That's very different. People who are making money off of infringement, I mean, there's no reason they should be able to do that. You could say, well, you know, this person's able to run a Netflix because he can make as many copies of the DVDs he wants and rent them out, and Netflix, you know, Netflix actually complies with the licenses for the movies and only gets as many copies as they license. Well, I mean, obviously it's the same. It's the same sort of analogy that people could say, well, why can't he compete? Well, because he's infringing the copyright. And so I think that's a slightly better analogy. The other thing I want to bring up when you talk about the police coming and arresting him, I actually am really against copyright infringement ever being criminal. I mean, we talked about how the DMCA makes some types of copyright infringement a felony, and I think that's really wrong. And I wrote a letter about the ACTA, which is the international...
The trade agreement thing, isn't it? I forget the full title of it.
Yeah, I do too, but basically it's trying to... When U.S. was looking to approve ACTA, which I think it ultimately did, I wrote a letter in the comment period saying basically that I do copyright enforcement as part of my GPL enforcement, and I see no reason whatsoever that it needs to be criminal. I just think the idea of getting arrested for copyright infringement is just wrong. It's a civil dispute. I mean, all our copyright enforcement, all our GPL enforcement, it's civil. We when we sue, we're suing in civil court because of a civil dispute. It's not like we bring the police to come and arrest some company. I just think that's wrong to make it criminal, because I don't think it's a crime. I think it's an injustice in the sense that in the way that lots of civil matters are injustice. You sue somebody in civil court because they've done something wrong to you, and you want to have recompense taken care of by the court, but the idea of the police getting involved, I just think that's wrong. I don't think there's any reason, and that's where I really, you know, a lot of times people compare, well, you know, you're like the MPAA, you're enforcing copyrights. Well, the MPAA will happily use criminal statute and arresting people to enforce copyrights, and I think it's not what copyright should be. Copyright's a civil matter between two parties. One party says you infringe my copyright. The other party says, no, I didn't, and then it's a civil dispute. You figure out who's right and who's wrong. It's not right to get the police involved. I just think that's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting issue. A lot of people, I mean, we're getting a little bit off topic of the talk, but a lot of people refer to this idea of stealing, copyright infringement as stealing, and as particularly like the MPAA would say that, and it's not really stealing, because you're not depriving the original owner of their copy. You are making a fraudulent copy, maybe, but you're not depriving the owner of their copy. So it's kind of strange. But I thought, speaking of the MPAA, I had a laugh at Matt's comments about approaching the MPAA about their GPL in violation through using Ubuntu on their website or something. Some clapping in the room as well, I noticed.
Yeah, I was one of the ones clapping, obviously. I mean, I think that it was quite ironic that the MPAA would screw that up, because they're so vehement about copyright enforcement, and the fact that they not only infringe copyright, commercially infringe copyright. They made a commercial product that infringed copyright. It's a classic example basically the hypocrisy in doing that, that they would screw that up, and the fact that they didn't really, I mean, I felt like it wasn't like they said, oh, we're sorry, we screwed up. I mean, it was an enforcement effort. It took effort to get them into compliance. And what the product did was already pretty nasty anyway. And so the fact that they were using free software, infringing its copyrights to basically take over your computer. I mean, that was just sort of the icing on the cake. It just sort of shows the kind of sort of despicable organization that they are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't agree more. I think we're very much in agreement on that. So, I mean, I really enjoyed listening to the talk. Anything else you want to say about it before we move on?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I really appreciate, Dan, that you were able to fill in for Karen. It was so nice of you to join, and I hope our listeners enjoy hearing producer Dan's voice for the first time on Free As in Freedom.
awareness